Hello, welcome to another episode of the InBeta podcast. In today's conversation, Ben and I reflect back on the WCPT conference that we attended, as well as the now famous unposter that we presented at the conference. We recorded this series of reflections very soon after we got back from WCPT, but because of work and a few other things that have been going on, it's taken us a while to get it edited and published. One of the things that we've been working on has been the InBeta newsletter, which is a monthly newsletter that we put out with just three things that we thought were interesting and that you might find useful when it comes to changing how you think about teaching and learning in physiotherapy education. The newsletter is free. You can sign up at inbeta.uwc.ac.za/newsletter. We recorded a separate conversation about the UN-conference, which took place immediately after WCPT. I'm hoping that over the next few weeks, I'll have enough time to edit that episode and get it out before the end of October. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy this episode where Ben and I reflect on the time that we spent at WCPT, where we talk about the value of conferences in general and tie that to the unposter session that we did at WCPT. I really hope that you enjoy this episode.
Okay then. So where should we start on trying to unpick WCPT?
Well, I guess, you know, just what were your overall impressions of the conference? Just to start at that high level, you know, what did you think of the biggest physiotherapy conference in the world?
the main event. I still don't know how to answer that question, to be honest. I think it was what I thought it would be like. is probably how I'd sort of start it. It's a bit divorced from everything, even in the sense of the city that we're in. Like, you know, we're next to the airport. It, you know, the kind of size of it just necessitates that sense of detachment into a kind of unworld. I'm going to put un at the front of everything here, but that kind of this kind of separate conference space that, you know, isn't like anything else. Like nothing else really exists in that kind of environment. So I got in late on the Friday. I missed the kind of warm-up packs and the kind of opening ceremony and that kind of stuff. So my first contact was on the Saturday morning. What I should say, I guess overall, is that I did very little being in sessions. So it amazed me, to be honest, how quickly 3 days went and how I kind of spent really a very short amount of that time in any kind of talk or presentation or seminar or anything else, you know. But I felt busy and occupied the whole time. I felt like I was having interesting conversations the whole time. So I'd kind of gone in with a mindset and was definitely reinforcing my biases as I went along in terms of what I assumed that I was going to get out of it. And then I kind of made that what I got out of it, I suppose. I didn't stay to the end of any session that I was in, apart from the one that I was talking in, which is maybe a bit self-indulgent or whatever. I don't know. What I thought about the thing at the whole is that it undoubtedly brought a lot of people together. There were loads of people there. You know, I almost underestimated how many people were there. I kind of, you know, it surprised me how many people that I knew were there I didn't bump into in the whole time I was there. So just actually you did get that sense of scale. And so it definitely did for me that role of enabling me to spend time having conversations with people that I wouldn't have spent time having conversations with if WCPT hadn't existed. So I guess it reinforced the benefits of an event to put people in the same place at the same time to have longer face-to-face conversations. I found that really useful. I was much more ambivalent about any of the information transmission that happened. So I guess that would be my sort of start point. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that you started with, just talking about detachment from context, I think I hadn't really thought about it, but as you were talking, I just thought, like, that's so true. I showed up 2 days and started, and so I had 1.5 days where I could just kind of walk around the city. And so I feel like I got a sense of Geneva, the city, but that was completely divorced from the conference itself. Whereas if I think about the experience that we had with the unconference, the kind of, not participation, but the kind of experiencing of the city was kind of built into what we wanted to do with the unconference. And so we had the wine tasting, we had to travel to that. We went out to a couple of restaurants, we had to travel to that. And I got a better sense of Lausanne than I did of Geneva. Geneva, I was there as kind of a tourist, but I felt like in Lausanne, we were kind of interacting in the city. And I feel like that gave a much kind of deeper, richer experience and a better feel for the city than I got in. I felt like an observer in Geneva and a participant in Lausanne. And I hadn't really thought about that at all until you started talking about this detachment from context. And I wonder if that's something that conference organizers could think about. Although in defense of, you know, the kind of conference organizers, there were also the clinical visits that were arranged as part of the conference. And I wonder if you had, you know, if you had been out on those clinical visits, we may have got a better sense of what at least rehabilitation or healthcare might have been like in the context of the city. I definitely agree with you about the expectations and the bias that's kind of built into, you know, what we were expecting and then what we got out of it. And I think my experience was very much the same as yours. You can look at the sessions from a certain perspective and already make a decision about the value of those sessions almost before you walk in. And then because of your confirmation bias, everything that feeds into that perception is just going to make you say, oh, I knew it. But again, in fairness, I think this is a clinical conference and the emphasis is very much on clinical practice. And, you know, that isn't, for me, that's not really something that I have a huge amount of interest in. But having spoken to people who are working at the kind of cutting edge of their fields, they felt that this was a very, very beneficial gathering to get a sense of what's happening at the cutting edge of their discipline. And
can I kind of come in at that point? I guess I want to ask what you mean by it's a clinical conference. Do you mean it's focused on clinical research, or do you mean it's a conference for clinicians? Because I think those are two different things, and I'm not convinced it was a clinical conference, I guess is where I'm coming at that question from.
I think of it as a conference for clinicians who go to hear about the latest clinical research. So I think that the people who are doing the presentations are mostly academics, but they are academics doing research in the clinical domain. And I think the participants of the conference are clinicians who are wanting to learn more about what's happening at the cutting edge of their disciplines.
Sure. No, so I'd agree that the focus was on clinical research. I would agree that the presenters were clinical researchers. I'm not sure. I mean, I'd be really interested to know how the split worked out. My sense wasn't necessarily that your average conference delegate was a pure clinical physio. I mean, some people were, for sure. It felt like the average delegate was probably someone who was involved in clinical research to some extent or another. Even if their day job was clinical, their reason for being there was probably linked to kind of presenting their master's project or something else. There were definitely some people from Switzerland and probably surrounding countries who were clinicians attending, you know, from a purely, like, let's find out what's going on perspective. And I had the same discussion. So, you know, certainly for people who were involved in clinical research, you know, I think found it very useful to have those discussions and see what else was happening, you know, in their field. The more sort of focused sessions definitely pulled together those people well, it seemed, you know, from an education or other more sort of niche areas, you know, maybe it that just wasn't its aim and it wasn't able to do that. But certainly one of my thoughts going into it, you know, has been what would your average working full-time physio get out of a conference? And I just think in terms of the way the predominant presentation style is about someone's work, someone's kind of research that they've done, that the focus is relatively on kind of the methods and the results of what they've done. Yeah. And again, like, obviously I went to a tiny subsection of the sessions that were there. And so I'm not in any way claiming to speak authoritatively about every single thing. And you know, it'd be very easy for people to say, oh, no, I went to a session where this absolutely happened. and I'm more than happy to be corrected on that, but I didn't get the sense that the focus very often was on translation of what that research meant for a clinician. The focus of the talks and the questions is what that research means, like, do we trust the research? Were the findings important or not? Not like, okay, should we implement this or should we not? Or how does that sit in the bigger picture of research? And from a clinical perspective, those seem more like, you know, the more important conversations.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Translation is not on the agenda, really. As much as you pay lip service to that in your 8-minute time slot, you can just barely cover the very, very basics of the research that you did. You don't have time to do the kind of work that is necessary for translation into practice. I think that more important question of, what does this mean for participants? How do they go home and actually put into practice what they've learned? I think that is not something that could easily be integrated into the conference format as it currently exists. So, and then the other thing that while you were talking made me think about was just the fact that most of the people who are attending this conference, they would have been subsidized. And so it's mainly going to be universities and maybe the kind of bigger professional organizations who are going to be funding their staff to go on to go to conferences like this. And so that kind of comes back to the point that you were making. How many just, normal everyday clinicians would have gone to the conference? Well, if they were paying for their own trip and registration, then probably not that many. And so there's probably some kind of a filtering bias where, just by nature of the fact that it's such an expensive conference to go to, very few people are going to be paying for that out of their own pocket. And so you're probably right in that most of the people attending are probably researchers and academics.
I guess one of the thoughts that I've been having then around that is does that matter? The kind of nature of anything like that is that if you're going to host it in one country and it's meant for everyone in the world to attend, it doesn't really matter how much you change the format or anything else. It's still going to be really prohibitively expensive. The time, effort, everything else is going to be relatively high. Should that even be the focus? Should we be trying to kind of aim it more at clinicians, or should the focus here be on whoever the managers, the higher up people in the home country organizations, the academics, the clinicians more, who are more at the top of their, professional network to attend and then have some dissemination of those things back? So should the focus of WCPT be to inform the agendas that are happening at the kind of national conferences, that are then happening in every country over the course of the next kind of 2-year cycle for WCPT? I don't necessarily have a problem if that is the focus. I'm not sure whether it is. And part of that is, I guess, if you kind of explicitly say that, then you're also implicitly saying, this isn't for you, and no conference organiser is ever going to really sort of draw that clear line of who they're not targeting.
You're right. I think if the purpose of this is to actually change practice, then like what they're doing is almost irrelevant, because in thinking about the way that it's structured, there is no way that either a clinical researcher or a clinician is going to be able to attend those sessions and to go back and to implement any kind of change on any kind of larger scale. And I think one of the points that you were making, I think on Twitter, there's a lot of people here, but it is such a tiny fraction of the number of physiotherapists in the world. If you're looking at scale, if you're looking at the potential for this meeting to actually lead to changes in practice, which is presumably what they're trying to say they're doing, there's no way that they're actually having that kind of an impact at the ground level. And I wonder if maybe that whole kind of conversation around the format, rather than look at the change in format, look at the change in objective. And if, as you say, it's about knowledge translation, and to say like, these 10 people from this country, they're going to go back and they're going to try and implement something at the national level through their kind of professional organizations, then we're having a very, very different conversation. And I think the way that the conference is presented, it maybe touches on some of those ideas, but there's no way that any of that is actually happening.
And I've said this before about kind of journal clubs and those approaches to thinking about research in practice environments. It would be really, in most cases, pretty bad practice to try and take something back that you heard at conference and implement it. Because of the structure of how that information is presented, because the focus is on what that researcher did and their work and their results, it can often not be kind of cited in that big picture in terms of like, okay, where does this, how does this move the overall understanding that we have of this topic or this, you know, this area of practice forward. And so if you went and you looked at a poster or you heard someone's talk and you thought, oh, that was a really good intervention that they did there, and they told me that their results were positive, like I'm going to try and do what they did. That's not how we teach evidence-based practice. It should only really then be a start point to think, okay, so let me go and look at the bigger picture here and understand, is this a finding that kind of supports other findings? How does it differ? And then again, there may well be people who are doing that and have kind of been, was a kickstarter to do that. And there may well have been presentations there of kind of systematic reviews or of primary research that kind of put it into the context that enabled people to do that better. I just wonder whether, you know, again, if that's what we're saying, if we're saying that this is a conference for a clinician to come to take ideas back into practice, I think that has to be the aim more. If that's not really the aim, and if the aim is for higher level kind of researchers and for people to be talking about the cutting edge stuff that's happening, then you don't need to put it into that context because you're not trying to present it to a clinical audience, but then it's something different, and then maybe would work then to think about how each of the groups of people from the countries that are there then took that stuff and kind of thought about how they what they then did with it. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you go on a course and then you are you going to then come back into work and like disseminate your new learning from that course to within the team? Because if you just kind of go on a course and like get your certificate and you've ticked a box for your CPD for the year, like that doesn't do anything. Whereas if you then think about, okay, how could they apply this to our context and to what we're doing here, and you know, then pull in other people from your work team to kind of, you know, to have that discussion and maybe look a bit wider around it, and you get all their perspectives, then something might come out of it. And you know, so maybe it's unrealistic to expect individuals to do that from a big conference with so much information, but maybe kind of groups and organisations could be better at having a strategy that pulls from a WCPT type event into more kind of local ones, which can influence clinicians.
Again, an interesting perspective. I'm just thinking, you know, if all these South African physios who went to WCPT had coordinated, have some kind of a strategic plan for attending WCPT and to say that, you know, as a country, what does the profession need? What are our objectives? What are the kind of niches that we want to occupy? Let's go to WCPT and specifically look out for intervention strategies that are going to help us achieve our objectives as a profession in the country. And then after WCPT, we come together and we talk about what each of us learned and how each of those things feeds back into the health needs of the country. You know, that's a far more coordinated strategic approach to attending a conference. And now we start dealing with the kind of interpretation of that cutting edge research that can be applied or implemented at the local level. And I think that would be a far more effective way to approach conference attendance, but it would require some kind of coordination. And I think we don't do that. We attend conferences as individuals. We go home as individuals.
But I think it's hard if you're generally going as the only person from your kind of organization going, or maybe one of a couple, then you're a small percent. You've got to have thought about that, haven't you?
You could still say to your professional organization, look, I'm going to this conference. Give me 3 to 5 things that are important for the profession in our country. And I will try to find, who are the leading researchers in that area? What are the top papers that people are talking about? And when I come home, let's have a conversation about how we can take what we've learned, how we can reach out and connect with people who are presenting that work, and how we can maybe, you know, could I give you the names of 3 people that we could fly out and do a 2-day seminar and, you know, those kinds of things. But as you say, there's a level of coordination that would be required in order for that to be successful. But, you know, on the other side, the benefit that you would get for that investment of extra time and energy, I think the benefit would far exceed anything that we see at the moment. Again, maybe I'm completely wrong, and maybe there's a huge amount of activity and change in practice that's going on, and I'm just not aware of it.
I'm going to move on to another question. So I was interested, what bits of the conference did work for you?
So before I went to the conference, I knew that there were about 10 meetings that I wanted to set up, and those were fantastic conversations. So of all the meetings that I had with people, it was all people who I am either collaborating with or would like to collaborate with. And, you know, this is the one opportunity where we were all going to be in the same space. And so I just set up a sequence of meetings, you know, loosely organized around what we were trying to do with the Embedded stuff. But in general, I just spent most of the conference sitting around talking to people outside of the sessions. And, you know, on the one hand, I could say that the conference itself had very little value for me. But on the other hand, none of those people would have been in the same place if it wasn't for the conference. You know, was WCBT valuable? Well, in terms of the content, no, not at all. In terms of the fact that it's the one kind of event that's powerful enough to get all of these people together in the same room, you know, that was incredibly valuable for me. What about you?
Yeah, so I think as I've already touched on, I mean, I'd say the same in that it was the ability to meet and to talk to people because they were there, because it's an event that draws people. So this wasn't my experience, but kind of reflecting on, we're crossing over, I guess, into a bit of some of the conversation that came out of the Unposter, which we'll talk about in a minute. But there was generally seemed a positive feeling around some of the kind of non-traditional conference sessions. So I think, you know, whilst I can't talk of my personal experience of these, but something that came up through several conversations I had with different people was that the focused symposia were on average better than like a standard rapid five or kind of platform session, which is based on abstracts from a wide field. So something that brought a more coherent sense of a session together, people seemed to appreciate that much more and felt that they got a lot more out of those sessions. People seemed very positive about the networking sessions that had been organised through WCPT. So I think there were things that WCPT had done which helped what we're talking about now, which is just the chance to sit down and talk to people. Now, if you've already got the capital, if you've already got the connections to an extent, then you can have set that up before you go and you don't need the conference infrastructure to help that. But I do think that some of those sessions may well have been very useful for people who either didn't have that or you know, it helped to just bring the people together, and then you could establish the connections in that room and then spill your conversation on outside of it.
Just to kind of echo that, the networking session, the one that I did attend for journal editors, was brilliant. I think they had one kind of long, almost like a keynote presentation, and then there was more conversation around the physiotherapy journal. And I think that 1 hour session was probably the best organized session that I went to at the conference. It's good conversation and kind of set up some kind of further things that we're going to be working on with the Open Physio Journal. And I think for me, that was very, very positive. There was also I don't know how much of this is just kind of, you know, trending, but the kind of exercise sessions that were incorporated into the conference, I've never seen anything like that before. And every time I saw it happening, it seemed pretty well subscribed to. So there was, you know, it was always packed. And I think that was pretty innovative and interesting. It'll be you know, interesting to see if that format is included in the conference moving forward.
Did you listen into any of the conversations in the Indaba section for people who hadn't gone? That was structured more around an informal conversation. I don't know. I kept on kind of meaning to go to one, and then the one that I meant to go then coincided with another conversation or something else and not quite making it. Because that seemed, you know, again, a kind of clear nod from the organisers towards kind of putting people together around a topic so that there could be conversation happening rather than, you know, kind of being a very structured information transmission style session. But I couldn't speak to how well that worked or not.
I also got great feedback from people who had attended. And I think that's, like what you're saying about information transfer, like that's not the objective of the Indaba session. And so it's a more open space for a more free form kind of conversation. So it's not directed in any way. There's a loose topic, but it's an open space for conversation. And I think people generally would get far more from that. The focused symposia gives the presenters and the audience an opportunity to get really deep insight into a particular topic. Now, that can either go very well or it can fall flat on its face. I spoke to a few people who had attended Focus Symposia or were part of Focus Symposia where they said that the person putting together the symposium was completely absent from any kind of planning and preparation. So they'd, you know, submitted the abstract, they'd got the team together and then kind of disengaged from the process. And so each person on the panel presented their interpretation, which led to an incoherent, you know, series of presentations that were kind of connected only through the various keywords in the title of the symposium. So I think the Focus Symposium can, when it's well organized and you've got a good chair, can work incredibly well because you get a series of four experts on a topic and they just go really deep dive into the topic. They give a lot of insight. And the audience members, I think there was one on stigma or diversity or inclusion, or there may have been two that were similar. And I just heard people just saying those were really fantastic sessions. And, you know, if you looked on Twitter, you could also see Twitter just kind of lit up when those sessions were underway.
And there seems something about the sort of relative scale of things. So the Indaba area, you know, was pretty small. Like, there's not loads of seats, so it's, you know, it's going to kind of self-limit the number of people who might kind of turn up to it. I went and spent a bit of time in one session where it was like a panel discussion, I suppose, questions from the audience in one of the sort of larger halls, really, organized as kind of, you know, theater style seating, so everyone just sitting looking at this panel of people on the stage. And the, you know, just as it is if you're trying to teach to a massive kind of lecture theatre full, like, it's incumbent on you as the teacher almost to keep the energy level, because there is an awful lot of people in that audience who aren't going to actively participate, however much the session might, you know, be set up as a chance for audience to interact and ask questions. If there are 300, 400 people there, you know, maybe six will ask a question. So there's a huge number who just aren't going to. And you know, again, that was a session that I didn't last till the end of, because the energy level, the attention just dropped through the floor very, very quickly on it. Whereas it felt like in the Indaba space, you were going to have a small enough number of people that a high proportion of the people in the session are going to be participating in some more active way, you know. And so just thinking about, you know, how we try and organise teaching sessions, again, with sort of smaller groups, you're going to get more kind of conversation around that topic. And it seems, so I think those kind of pedagogical theories, you know, where you can use those to influence how the session organisation happened. And it's a problem that those kind of big conferences have, is that, you know, if you're going to have 4,500 people turning up there, like, you can't have, you know, 100 sessions for sort of 43 people each. You know, you're going to have sessions where hundreds of people can go into the same room. And so it's unrealistic to expect that you can get that engagement. So it seemed like where those worked well, that gives the organisers a kind of challenge, really, as to how do you scale the infrastructure around the good conversations up to, so that more people feel like they're having them. Because if you try and just make those sessions bigger, either the networking or the Indaba, very quickly it stops becoming, or it loses the things that makes them good. And it's a bit of a catch-22, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. As soon as you try to scale it beyond a certain number, it just becomes difficult to sustain.
So should we start with the Unpost?
Yeah. What did you think?
So for those who don't know what the Unpost was...
There's nobody who doesn't know what the Unpost is.
Obviously, the Unpost, you know, was the undoubted star of my output in the time at WCPT. So the Unpost was our attempt, well, I guess, I mean, our first kind of submission to a conference in terms of something like, you know, what would be recognized as academic output from in beta. You know, I guess that was our first thing. And we tried to use it as an opportunity to kind of challenge a lot of the stuff we've been talking about already about kind of conferences and their worth, and particularly posters and their worth. So we did that in a couple of ways by taking the traditional way of doing a poster, which is to present a fair chunk of information on one sheet of paper and take all the content off the paper and put that online, so that it could be accessed by anyone who they didn't need to be at the conference. And instead to try and use the poster as a conversation starter for people who were next to it. So to try and, you know, use that, the fact that people were in the same space at the same time, to have more of a conversation rather than trying to transmit lots of information. We also used some augmented reality, not because I don't think our argument isn't in any sense that all posters should move into augmented reality, but just to show that there may be better ways to present information. And actually, you know, if what you're trying to show is quite a visual thing, a video is a better way of doing that. And putting a video onto a poster is doable, but you need some technical know-how to do it, whereas putting a video onto a website is really easy and we can all do it. And so again, kind of trying to reinforce that idea that the poster may not be an effective means to demonstrate that. So having said so, there was a couple of ways that we tried to, I was interested to see whether we were effective at doing the information transmission better digitally rather than in person. It's really hard to measure that. But if you look at like how many people visited the poster, I don't know. I should have had a little clicker to count that. I think we were both like pleased with the interaction that we got. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think, if I compare the Embeta poster session with my poster session, they were, you know, completely different categories. Obviously, my poster was, I think, more niche, so there'd be probably far fewer people attending the conference who were interested in that. But, you know, I had significant periods of time standing next to my poster where I was pretty lonely. Whereas if the Embeta poster, the AMP poster, I mean, it was just from the tea break, which is before our session was even scheduled, you know, both of us were just constantly in conversation with people who were interested in what we were doing. So, I mean, I've never been at a poster session at a conference where I've literally for about 2 hours just been constantly engaged with people. And there were two of us.
And we kind of had to turn people away. I mean, that was the thing that made that kind of at the end of the tea break, when the kind of, you know, there were sessions starting and we were probably talked out at that point, you know, but people were still kind of being drawn to the poster. We were making no effort to sort of sell it or draw people in. So I think it showed something about poster design. You know, so in what was a row of very content heavy posters, you know, that our poster drew attention because it didn't have content. It just had some big bright blocks of color. You could easily kind of get a sense of the question it was asking. And that was all it did is essentially ask that question. And then it was relatively easy to draw people into a conversation around that question. We didn't have to do, I mean, we probably did a bit of explaining around the augmented reality and whatnot, but I felt like it gave us the permission to, as a conversation starter, by framing the poster as a question, you know, that was definitely the way that I kind of approached a lot of the conversations I had, was to ask that question of people there. And so it wasn't just about me telling people what I thought, it was a two-way conversation. I thought I had some really interesting conversations, and people were quite honest about whether they felt that the conference itself was worth their time. It was quite nice that our session was on the Monday. People had 2 days of the conference, and, you know, probably had a decent sense of what they, you know, had taken out of it. Pretty much every conversation that I had, I would say, has echoed the stuff that we've already talked about on this podcast, which is that people valued the conversations, they valued the networking sessions, some of the focus symposia, the things that got them engaged in talking to people around like a common interest. And there was very few people who were saying massively positive things about the more traditional forms of information given at conferences. And that conversation, you know, was clear and repeated with people from all, you know, whether they were clinicians, from all sorts of different countries, you know, people who we knew and who would come to see us because they knew we'd put the poster on, and people who we didn't know at all and just happened to be walking past and we started to talk to. And that was, so that was in stark contrast, I felt, to what we'd, the interaction that we got online. So online, we had undoubtedly more people viewed the website than viewed the poster. So I think the website had like 300, over 300 views across several days. So it had its most views on the day of the poster, like 92. But actually, it wasn't just people who were looking at the poster who'd then gone onto the website. So you know, disseminating that out through Twitter and whatnot, you know, enabled more people to see it. So I think it proved that point to me, that you can, if you just want to share information out with people, you can do that digitally, and you'll get more people see it than are ever going to see our poster in the time that we stood there. But then what we asked people to do on the website was to kind of tweet their thoughts on the question using the hashtag, and like nobody did that. I mean, the only interaction we got around that was then from people who had also come to see us and were engaged with us in person, and were then like reflecting some of their thoughts then onto the hashtag in support of us, really, I guess.
Colleagues and friends who felt sorry for us and thought that there should be something in the Twitter stream.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I found that really interesting, that, you know, it kind of reinforced that point, that what the quality of the conversation that you can have in a face-to-face interaction is going to outweigh what you're going to often have in digital space. By being at the conference, there was that was the kind of catalyst for the conversation, because of the physical presence of us all in the same space at the same time. I don't know whether people read the website and had a thought about it, or didn't have a think about it, or didn't get past the first couple of lines on there. But if what you're wanting to do is to get interaction, is digital an effective way to do that? I don't know. It certainly made me question that anew, I guess.
I see them as having like a symbiotic relationship. Would we have had as many people come in to see the poster in person if we hadn't have had all of the interaction online and the promotion online? So if there wasn't a web page where people could go and look at the poster, you know, it'd be interesting to know how much of one drove the other. So did people come and look at the poster in person and then go to the website? Or did they get their interest piqued by seeing something on Twitter and then making a point to come and see the poster? It'd be interesting to see if we had gathered some data and asked people, why did you come here? Did you just notice the big crowd of people around the poster holding up iPads? Or did you see something on Twitter that made you think, that's something I need to go and check out? Or did you go to the website after you came and had a conversation? You know, so I think there's definitely some kind of relationship between the online and the offline that we haven't really discussed very much.
And I think what it does is it reinforces the sense of a kind of echo chamber that can exist online. You know, so if it had to have just been people who kind of follow me or you on Twitter who came to talk to us, then, you know, the chances are that they might be more likely to reflect our views and to, you know, for us all to feel like we're having the same conversation. And that's what the poster enabled us to do, was, or certainly I felt it enabled me to do, was to have conversations with lots of people who didn't know who I was, hadn't come across the poster before, were just walking past, and were kind of attracted in because, yeah, it looked different. And actually then in the conversation, I think we ended up with they probably had fairly similar views. That made me, I guess, feel more confident in my thoughts about conferences, because I wasn't only hearing my views reflected back from people who I thought probably agreed with them anyway. Within a digital context, it's really hard. There was no obvious way for me to put the poster in front of people online who didn't already know about me or us or anything that we'd done. Yeah, again, I think, you know, perhaps that's a good thing for that sort of big conference that pulls people together. So you end up crossing ideas with people who, you know, you wouldn't have done otherwise. And it, you know, again, maybe that's a negative. If we only go to a conference and have prearranged conversations with people who we already know that we're, you know, would want to link up with? Like, do we miss then some of the kind of serendipitous, interesting stuff that's out there?
Yeah, I think, and what you're saying there touches on a conversation that we had at the conference where we kind of realized that the way we were talking about the poster was changing in real time as a result of the conversations that we were having with people who came to look at the poster. And in some ways, I think it reflects what we do in the podcast series, where we're really just getting together with a group of people and we're all just thinking in public about this topic and kind of capturing those thoughts. And for me, what came out very strongly in the poster session is that when I walked out of the poster session, the way that I thought about the poster and the message and what we were trying to say was actually different than when I went into the poster session. And that came out for me very strongly. I was very surprised. And that was completely unexpected. I thought I had a pretty good sense of what we were trying to say with the poster. And as a result of those conversations with people, some of whom disagreed with us, there was that one woman who just, you know, point blank refused to vote or do anything, you know, no interactions. And, you know, she was definitely pushing back against some of what we were saying. And I think that pushback and the conversation with people who disagreed on some aspects, you know, because, you know, a lot of people were also saying, oh, this is, you know, this is good. You're taking this really complex issue and reducing it to this binary choice. And, you know, that's definitely one way to get conversation going. But yeah, we both kind of said, you know, we had walked out of that session with different ideas than we had gone into it. And I think that reflects a lot on what we try to do with the podcast series, is where we kind of present a topic, but it's in talking about that topic with other people in community that we develop ideas in real time, rather than coming in with a set kind of idea saying, I'm the expert, I'm going to tell you how it is. There's this openness to having your mind changed, which, again, I think that happens through conversation and discussion, which is almost completely impossible when you are doing that short form presentation of, you know, here are the facts and you can ask some questions, but ultimately, you know, there are no minds being changed here. And so I thought it was great that, you know, both of us had our minds changed in some way as a result of the conversation that happened around the poster.
Yeah, I mean, I'd 100% agree with that. I think that when you're presenting your work, what can happen is you get defensive if people do push back or kind of challenge it. Whereas I think the kind of framing of it as a question. So rather than just us kind of presenting, oh, this is in beta, kind of saying, you know, let's take a half step back and kind of question a way of doing it. And we're proposing an alternative, but we're also kind of can acknowledge the limitations of that. And I felt acknowledged the limitations of it more by the end almost than I would have done at the start, but that didn't feel problematic to me. It felt, you know, like there was still a place for what we were saying, but that I was probably more positive about the physical conference, and which probably, I mean, we talked a lot about the idea of, you know, a flipped conference as maybe being something that could be an interesting way of sort of squaring the circle of the challenges that we've talked about, of getting that kind of the broader access to ideas and information transmission through the digital, but then making use of the people in the room at the same time, being able to talk about a topic that interests them. And we're not talking about the UN conference now, but that is at one end of the spectrum, where it's not about necessarily gaining new, it is about gaining new knowledge from the people, but it's not about sharing the new knowledge that you've created. And there is a benefit to that, and we do need to do that. But actually, it could be a waste of the conference time and space and everything if we spend too much time doing the transmission there and thinking about ways to do that beforehand, and then allow the conference format to be focused more around questions and discussion that you can, as you say, think in public and we can come out with different ideas on. That seemed more stimulating. You know, we then talked at length about those ideas afterwards and you know, how you could kind of come at that. And I just don't think that we'd have got to that point if we hadn't have had all the conversations that we had, and if we hadn't have framed it around a question in the way that we did.
Yeah, I think we both went in, well, I felt fairly confident in the conclusion that we kind of were at least tentatively clinging to, which was that, you know, we don't need conferences. And, you know, you can acknowledge the problems with that statement, but also be fairly confident in the validity of the claim. And I think by the time we had left, you know, there had been enough conversation where we kind of had left the conclusion a little bit vague and open. But I think we weren't emotionally tied to that conclusion. So there was no need to defend the claim. And so just by being open to having that that pushback, I think we could have a different conversation with people. So rather than trying to convince them about the rightness of our claim, we could have a conversation around, you know, just the fact that this is a complex question. And I think the conversation that we had around taking the flipped classroom model and applying it to the conference level, where we might abstract all the content and the information out and create space within the conference. I think we were trying to look at how we could scale a model for kind of deep conversation within the format of a big conference. Then I think that kind of came directly out of the conversation that we were having around the poster. Almost like the poster is a microcosm of this conference that would be happening at a bigger scale. For me, that was quite a big moment in the conference that I think was very valuable.
I think we should, you know, just, it's important that the record does show that on the vote, it was a clear win for not having any more conferences, though.
I didn't actually know that. I didn't know that. I didn't know what the outcome of the vote was. So it's good that we were validated in our claim, however tentative it was.